The frog in the window will sing for you. The frog in the window will smile for you with his straw hat and his cane. And you know that you will not be the same, 'cause the frog in the window will dance for you. He'll tap out the rhythm in his bright red shoes. And if you ask why this is done, he'll say you're real when you will not be.
You are listening to In the Window with DJ Frogs on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more. That was Pam and the Paperclips and their single Typing Pool. It was written by Nigel Plane and his brother. You may know Nigel better as the hippie Neil in the sitcom The Young Ones. I don't know who Pam is, but I suspect it may be Pamela Stevenson. And sorry about the scratches, but I have the only copy I've ever seen. Now, look out, there's a monster coming.
And 3, 4.
Thank you.
lonely, unmarried, looking for love. Life was passing me by. So I sent off my photo, hobbies and age. Magazine marriage I'd try. They say for centuries, lovely Japanese girls have been trained in the art of pleasing men. Be lonely no more, open destiny's door. For $1 they arrange a meeting. My image was wrong, I didn't like me, so I changed my personality. I bought a deluxe Mersey Beach wig, but it was a size too big. What confidence in my new built-up shoes, so smart for winter or summer, undetectable in normal everyday use. Look out, there's a monster coming. Bye-bye binoculars and Macintosh, everything is just great. I take elocution, learn to speak posh, but still I can't find a mate. Be popular, learn to play the guitar, in 7 days you could be strumming. Be sociable, learn kissing technique. Look out, there's a monster coming. For my Kanabi clothes, I reshape my nose. Plastic surgery's best. To cut down my weight, off comes my left leg. I pass the swimming costume test. Are my sideboards too long? Don't my aftershave pong? I know my nude nose ain't running. What's wrong with my tie? Am I getting too high? Look out, there's a monster coming. Disfiguring ugly, my facial hair I had removed electrically. I rejuvenated my energy cells and regained my virility. Grunt, grunt, he put my hand on my heart, I ain't to change any part. He had a machine for a mommy. Please be gentle with me, I come to pieces, literally. Look out, there's a monster coming. 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 Look out, there's a monster coming.
That was the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, and they also claim that we are normal.
Here comes some normals. They look like normal Hawaiians.
Well, you didn't mention what much. Oh,
you think you're normal?
Yes, quite normal.
Okay, here comes one.
Say.
Well, it's not for me to deter, really, is it? I mean, it's for a psychiatrist to deter these things, isn't it?
They like their food, and they are very nice people.
It's all right, isn't it?
I've got fangs.
Smart. Short back side.
They're just typically normal.
Yeah,
it's just not
random. Yeah, it is unusual. Well, it's like a rabbit. He's got a head on him like a rabbit.
Oh, that's what normal people do.
We are normal and we dig for weed.
Bonzo Dog Doodah Band and We Are Normal. Now over to Uncle Buffo.
Here is the fourth and final part of An Evening with Quentin Chris.
Do you feel that love between two people is restrictive or confining? What then do you feel the reward or advantage of love is? Now, first of all, will you accept that love is the extra effort that we make in our dealings with those whom we do not like? Now, you are the people who wanted to redistribute the wealth of the world. And half of the wealth of the world is its love. Now, if we give all the love to the brave and the beautiful, they will become the millionaires of love. This, I think we're agreed, is objectionable. We must, therefore, if we are going to give any more of our attention, our solicitude, to one person than another, it must be given to the unlovable. Anything else would be wrong. If you're going to do this, this is how you must do it. But if we are going to have a relationship between two people, the trouble is that one of you will almost inevitably adopt the part of the stooge. One of you will be left expressing amazement and amusement at jokes you have heard a thousand times. You do understand that when I say you must live alone, I am not trying to curtail your sex lives. All I'm trying to do is to snatch the straw from your beak and prevent all this nesting. If you share a territory, you will in the end only be left with the things about which you disagreed. If you get up at 6 a.m, and your little friend gets up at 6 a.m, within a week you will take this for granted. You will say, isn't it amazing? We agree. But if your friend wants the soap on the left-hand side of the wash basin, and you want it on the right, divorce. And people will say, you got divorced over a cake of soap? They forget that you moved it every day. Would you comment on loneliness? Now, there again, we first of all have to agree. A person is lonely who does not know what to do with the time when he's alone. Are we agreed about that? It's not the number of hours you spend alone. It's when you walk about the room thinking, oh, I'm alone, no one ever comes to see me, I am nothing, I am worthless. All this is what matters. And this is because you haven't yet understood that what matters is not what other people think about you, but what you think about yourself. Once you've decided that, you know who you are, you know what you're doing, and every moment that you're alone is spent dealing with your identity, getting it together. I personally have to live alone. How else would I recharge my batteries? And I have said to people who live with a partner, how do you manage to be wise, witty, kind and beautiful for 24 hours a day? They never answer. Is anyone here willing to answer? Do you think the present disco craze has produced style or merely another stereotype? What's wrong with the disco craze is the music. Music is a mistake. Now, when I was young, the world was silent. Well, there were concerts, but these took place in concert halls. Now, a concert hall is like the gents. If you feel a certain need, you go to the place. where this need can be and there you meet other people in the same predicament. And if the place is properly constructed, the stench of culture does not seep out into the street. But this is no longer the case. The music is everywhere. One cannot help asking, of what were you afraid? Why couldn't you bear the sound of the puff-puffs on the station? Why did you have to have the music? Why couldn't you bear the sound of the barber's clippers? Why did you have to have the music? Why have you reduced all human experience to one experience, the music? You've taken away all the variety that there used to be in life. And worse than that, you've had to give up the words. You've had to give up the speech. There simply is no point in trying to talk anymore because the noise is too loud. And when you give up the words, you give up the thoughts. Because in the beginning was the word. The word provokes you to have thoughts. It's when you realize that there are words like greedy, materialistic, worldly, avaricious, and so on, that you start to find ideas which express these shades of meaning. People who've read a great deal of poetry are always falling in love. How else would they use up all the fine phrases they've learned? But you have thrown all this away. You can't speak anymore. You can only gibber and twitch. And this seems to me a terrible mistake, because one of the great adjuncts of your style was your vocabulary. I'm afraid of flying. Since you come from a time without aeroplanes and now must do a great deal of flying, any advice? Well, I don't think anything can be done about your being afraid of flying. I think you could walk. I myself was... constantly told before I'd ever flown anywhere that I would suffer from jet lag. There isn't any such thing, especially when coming from England to America. All you do is to get into an aeroplane, you go up in the air, and like Nijinsky, you pause there a little and Canada comes by. No problem. To what do you attribute the human race's revised opinion of yourself? Entirely to the fact that my life story has been shown on television. As everybody knows who saw the television play, it was a saga of human depravity. But this has made no difference. So we can now safely say that if anybody in this audience has some terrible habit of which he's deeply ashamed, don't do it in secret, do it on television. Nobody will walk by on the other side of the road with averted gaze, saying, "Don't look now, there's that disgusting man." They will cross the street at the risk of losing their own lives to say, "We saw you on the telly." And this has happened to me, and indeed I have passed from total ostracism at such speed to notoriety so vast that it verges on popularity. And I've never experienced the middle bit. I'm never with people. They are in my presence. I never have conversations, only interviews. And all this has been done by television. I've stayed right where I was, only the world has altered. The Naked Civil Servant ends on a depressing note. Are you going to continue your biography in book form? Certainly I will, because I've been instructed to do so. I will write a description of the last 10 years since the book came out. And it will be called How to Become a Virgin. Why the title The Naked Civil Servant? A feature writer from a paper called The Scotsman came to ask me if I was the most famous model in England, and I explained that there was no such thing. In a time gone by, there were famous models. They were all women who went about Chelsea trying to look significant. And that time has completely passed. The relationship between the model and the artist is finished. Therefore, a model does not work for artists. He works for art students. He arrives at the right time, on the right day. He signs on. He presents his insurance cards, which are stamped. He signs off. He is paid by check, which would have caused the models of the old days to faint dead away. They'd never seen a bank, let alone a check. And nowadays you are working for the Ministry of Education. You are just like any other civil servant, except that you have no clothes on. Hence the title of the book. What advice do you have for aspiring writers? If you're going to write, you write one book, and it is a book about yourself. This is the tale that only you can tell. So beginning tomorrow, you start to keep a diary. Not the way you kept your diary when you were a child, and your parents gave you a diary for Christmas, and you wrote school in the morning, school in the afternoon, went to the pictures in the evening. We don't need to know what you did. We need to know what you thought, because this will bring back the past vividly. When you look back through the mists of time, you will think, oh, I had a wonderful childhood. But you can read in your diary, I will kill my mother. So then you're made to think, what caused me to say this? And this brings back the coloration of your past. And when you've written your book, you then get it put on to television. And then you're away. You're in the clear. Television is the great adjunct of your style. Perhaps I should explain the way in which you cause television to work on your behalf. It's like a geography exam. You can't study the whole world. So the night before the exam, you get your atlas and you open it at random. And it says China. So you study China. And the next day, the main question in your paper is France. So your answer begins, France is not like China. I'll try and translate that into television terms. If you've arrived at the studios with a wonderful anecdote about your mother, and some clot says, how's your father? You reply, father's worn out, coping with my mother. Who? You say what you've come to say, no matter what. I'm a 45-year-old man who is losing my hair. Have tried rugs, full wigs, weaving, and transplants. They haven't worked. What should I do? Shave your head. This is the principle on which it works. you are losing your hair. So you embrace the loss of your hair. You swim with the tide, but faster. Don't try to move back to a poor imitation of what other people are. Embrace what you alone have. What have you seen of the New York gay scene? I've seen very little of it, but I have been to restaurants which were either exclusively or almost exclusively gay restaurants. And the worrying thing to me is that all the people look exactly alike. There's one restaurant where there were no women to start. There were only men. They were between the ages of 18 and 28. They had tractor boots, jeans, kitchen table cloth shirts, and little moustaches. To a man. And in England, they now have the Mexican look. They cut their moustaches, I think, secretly from underneath, and then they fold the other bit over the top. And if you see anybody with these roly-poly moustaches, you can safely stretch out your hand and shake his, saying, "I see you two are queer." So what good is this? You go there and you meet one of these people and you think, here is this great dark man. And you take him away with you and you roll on the ground at his feet, saying, "Walk on me, I am your slave." And he says, "Oh, do get up, you're ruining the carpet." It's hopeless. This is conformity of the most absurd kind to me. If you've struggled through all these layers of convention, of disapproval, what is the good if you've only arrived at your own form of convention? Do you understand my objection to this? Have you met the Queen? Question. Of England, that is. What do you think of her style? Well, I think it's evident that the style adopted by the Queen of England has been imposed upon her, or at least she has been advised to adopt it by ministers, by advisers, whatever. It can't be natural for the fifth richest woman in the world to adopt a deliberately middle-class image. Therefore, I imagine that this is to put her in the position of being able to walk through the crowd, to accept bouquets of wilting flowers from little children. I mean, Queen Mary made no effort to be anything except like Queen Mary. So what one praises in the present Queen of England is the graciousness and the grace with which she has accepted the function, the duty of adopting this image and making this situation work. I regret it. If I were part of the royal family, I would be wearing my crown at breakfast. Do you believe in God? Oh dear, we've had this question before, and last time I said I wouldn't like to say anything that would offend anyone. Someone in the audience said, "Why stop now?" However, what I would say is that I'm unable to believe in a God susceptible to prayer. I simply haven't the nerve to imagine a being, a force, a cause, which keeps the planets revolving in their orbits and then suddenly stops in order to give me a bicycle with 3 speeds. It just seems too improbable. Some years ago, on a wintry day, I signed my name in the snow by urinating, so that the stream of warm fluid etched a pattern of letters spelling out my name in the snow. Would you consider that urinating in style? I would. How do you get rid of a boring lover? When we say of anybody that he or she is boring, the criticism is of ourselves. I was hit over the head by a critic in Toronto called Mrs. Mallet. She was cross. Well, she was cross because I said that nobody was boring who would talk about himself. So now I've revised that, and I would say nobody is boring who will tell the truth about himself. Are we agreed that nothing is boring except a lie? So the fault is ours because we have not laid ourselves open, made ourselves available to the extent that would cause another person to be totally willing to tell the truth about himself. We are still the kind of person from whom other people shield themselves. So the fault is ours. And the answer is, do not get rid of a boring lover. Do not ever get rid of anybody. Just make them tell you the truth by being totally sincere, truthful, available yourself. There is a movement called Est, and there was a Reverend Jones. What would be your reaction to people regarding you as a cult figure? Well, all cults, of course, are a mistake. All efforts to subjugate yourself to somebody else totally is a mistake. To reside your destiny in someone else. Of course, you take note of what other people say. You may even see in other people things that you admire and things that would suit you. But if you make your entire destiny over to somebody else, you have in fact thrown away your life. So it is absolute nonsense to imagine that you can increase your value, your power, by merely adding yourself to a great number of other people. It gives you the false idea that you then have the power and possibly even the right to hit everybody else over the head. So all cults are a bad thing. You look a bit dazed. Do you believe this? Do you understand me? Would you tap dance for us a little bit? I'm afraid I can hardly walk. I wear shoes. Oh, I've taken them off now. Which are falling apart merely in order to give my feet some comfort. What advice do you give to those who are afraid of growing old? Can a senior citizen have a lifestyle? Now, there is a story told of Somerset Maugham that he made a speech beginning, "There are advantages in growing old." And then he stopped. And he stopped for so long that someone in the audience thought he should get up and go to his assistance. Whereupon Mr. Maugham said, "I was just trying to think of one." Now, it's not for me to go on where Mr. Maugham left off, but I do. And I will tell you the advantage of growing old. As it's toward the end of the run, you can overact appallingly. What do you think about physical exercise? Well, when I was still a model, I had to do a certain number of exercises every day. Or else I might have got into the positions, but I would certainly never have got out of them. And among other things, I used to stand on my head. Because when you're a model, by the end of standing for 8 hours, Your face is grey, your chest is pink, your middle is yellow, your feet are mauve. So you have to reverse this at some time or other. And while I was standing on my head, I used to do these breathing exercises. Now, the real advantage of any system of exercises is that they force you, for the duration of the time when you do them, to live inside yourself. Doesn't matter whether you're doing total relaxation, deep breathing, whatever it is. You're compelled to relinquish the future in which there is anxiety, and the past in which there is regret, and other people in whom there is betrayal. And you move down inside yourself. You establish only the relationship between you and your body. I imagine this is the way that animals live. True happiness is to live in the continuous present throughout your body for as long as possible. Have you ever had your face lifted? You look good. Thank you. No, I haven't. There would be no point. We're back where we started. What is the good of my changing my face so that you then are addressing someone 25 years younger than I am? The meaning of my face, the point of having a face, is that it's something that other people recognize. And if you change it so as to make it something quite different, this is, to my mind, a great mistake. Also, of course, once you've had your face lifted, you have to alter your entire past. You have to be careful not to remember who Greta Garbo is. I couldn't bear not to remember who Greta Garbo is. What would your advice be to young gays? My advice in general to gay people is simply to go on living your life as though you did not see any reason either to boast or to conceal your life. When people ring me up and say, what shall I do? My mother doesn't understand me. I say, first of all, have you tried doing nothing? Have you tried saying nothing? And if that doesn't work, I say, neither confirm nor deny. And if people say, what does that mean? I say, it means don't get into a conversation with your parents, which leads them to imagine you will one day marry someone you have been to the pictures with three times. On the other hand, don't waltz down to breakfast with the words, guess what? Because this will only worry them. Can style get in the way of people getting to know each other? No. You've misunderstood it. It is the way in which you present your total self instantly to other people. It is the means by which you know other people, and if possible, by which you know the whole world. What can formal education teach youth today that is important? Education is, of course, a mistake. You don't need to accumulate any facts except the facts about yourself. The rest you can find in the public library. I once knew the names of the currents of the Pacific Ocean. When will I use this knowledge? Wit seems such a part of your style. What is wit? And can I become a wit? Yes, indeed. There's no difficulty whatsoever. It's simply a question of arranging the words in the right order. The natural thing is to say the important part of any statement first. This is a mistake. You have to reverse this and save the important part to the end. I'll try to give you an example. On one occasion, an interviewer asked an elderly actress if the time in which she had been a Gaiety girl had been as risque as we now think. And she said, "A peculiar morality prevailed at the time. We were allowed to accept gifts of flowers, candies, jewels, furs, houses, yachts, and islands, but never money." Now, it is simply the arrangement of the words. She could have said, "We were never allowed to accept gifts of money, but we could accept gifts of any kind of value." There's no joke there. And the other way of being witty is to set up an idea in one context and then introduce something which is, as it were, a pun on this. I once knew a woman who arrived at my house and said that her engagement had been broken off. And then she added, "Now I suppose I've got to give back the ring." And I said, "Of course you must give back the ring, unless the diamonds are real." And she said, "Oh, the diamonds are real. It was his love that was paste." Now, it is this reference to one thing in terms of another which constitutes a certain kind of wit. And once you've learnt these formal things, you simply adapt them to your mode of speech, and then you can do it forever and ever. "How much of what you said tonight do you believe?" "Oh, I believe it all. The important thing is how much of what I've said tonight do you believe that I believe?" As far as I'm concerned, the humour of the situation consists in my saying exactly what I mean, however outlandish it seems to you. This is the essence of humour rather than wit, is this discrepancy of styles between your mode of thought and mine. To me, it would be useless for me to sit here making jokes about mothers-in-law when you know I haven't got one. I would like to thank everybody for staying so long. And then to say that, of course, I know that in any group of people, there are those who do not want, do not need, might even despise having a lifestyle. I'm trying to speak to those people who feel the band always seems to be playing in another street, and who feel that they're mysteriously locked in their rooms. And when I say the door is not locked, go to where the band is playing, they say, "I haven't a thing to wear." Now, as I see it, you only have to wear your wonderful selves. And what I feel gives me the right to say this is if I, who am nothing, who am nobody, have got to New York with my fare paid, anyone can do it. And the reason why the message seems to be urgent is because the benefits are very considerable. They may not be what you imagine. People rush up to me in the street and say, "Now that you're rich and famous." They never get any further because I stop them. As you all know perfectly well, I am not famous, I am notorious. And if I am rich, it is because I have taken my wages in people. You are my reward, and thank you.
If you go to Frog's blog at madasaboxof.blogspot.com, madasaboxof, all one word, you will find a link to Quentin Crisp's alternative Christmas Day Queen speech. Yes, every Christmas Day, the Queen gives us Brits a speech as a present, and it's as bad as you think it might be. but now Channel 4 give an alternative, and Quinton Crisp gave the first one. You're listening to DJ Frogs in the Window with Uncle Boffo's Comedy Spot on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more.
Thank you, Uncle Boffo. Now, here come the fleas.
Yourself a week.
Go back to sleep.
Can't begin to clear that mess in the kitchen. The windows crack, the basin leaks. No light on the stair, you just don't care. You better beware, or I might take a tumble. Stopping a slop, go run a few more, and I'll give you a kiss.
That was White Noise and Here Come the Fleas. And now here comes Neil Mills with Seven Number Poems.
1 9, 1 1 9, 1 1 1 9, 8. 1 1 1 1 9 8 4, 1 1 1 1 1 9 8 4, 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4, 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4, 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4 1 9 8 4.
7 7, 7 7, 6 5 3 1 5 2 8 2. 7 7, 7 7, 7 7, 7 7, 6 5 3 1 5 2 8 2. 7 7, 7 7, 4 4 4 4 5 4 4 4 8 4 3 4 4 5 9. 5 9, 5 4, 5 4, 5 4 4 4 4 1 4 4 4 4 4 5 4 4 4 8 4 3 4 4 5 9. 5 9, 5 4, 5 4, 5 4 4 4 4 1 4. 3 4 2 4. 6 5 9 5 6. 8 2 1 7 1 2 8. 6 5 9 5 6. 4 2 4 3. 1 4 8 4 7 1 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 3 7. 2 2 8 3 8. 2 1 2 4 8. 1 2 1 2 8. 8 2 1 6 7. 8 4 8 6 7. 1 2 8 1 7. 1 4 8 4 7. 1 4 8 4 7. 1 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 3 7. 2 2 8 3 8. 2 1 2 4 8. 1 2 1 2 8. 8 2 1 6 7. 8 4 8 6 7. 1 2 8 1 7. 1 4 8 4 7. 1 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 4 7. 2 2 8 3 7. 2 2 8 3 8. 2 1 2 4 8. 1 2 1 2 8. 8 2 1 6 7. 8 4 8 6 7. 1 2 8 1 7. 1 4 8 4 7. 9212129 0642460 3992993 7358285370
That was Neil Mills and Seven Number Poems, an experiment in disintegrating language. Now, more Bonzo Dog Doodah Band and The Canyons of Your Mind.
In the canyons of your mind, I will wander through your brain to the ventricles of your heart, my dear. I'm in love with you again. Cross the mountains of your chest, I will stick a Union Jack to the forest of your cheek. Through the holes in your string bag. Once again, I hear your love, and I kiss, yes, I kiss your perfumed hair,
but she's not there.
The sweet essence of giraffe. And each time I hear your name,
my, how it hurts.
He's in pain. In the wardrobe of my soul.
Oh, my soul.
In the section labeled shirts.
Another Bonzo's track, it's Humanoid Boogie.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this show. If you have been, then thanks for listening.